poorer after she'd finished her shifts at the hotel. Now he looked in bad shape. His coat was dirty and he was unshaven. "Stay here," Matt ordered, and set off towards Colin. Colin locked his gaze with Kitty and realized he'd been sighted. He immediately began to run, back towards the more run-down area on the far side of town. "Hi, you, stop!" Matt raced after him. Kitty ignored Matt's instruction and followed them as quickly as her heels and skirt would allow. Her breath came in harsh gasps as she rounded the corner in time to see Matt grab hold of Colin's jacket. Colin immediately tried to wriggle free and, failing, aimed a punch at Matt. Matt dodged out of his way, but his balance shifted on the wet, slippery cobbles. Colin spied his chance and gave Matt a hard shove, knocking him into the side of the building against a wooden post. Matt released his quarry as he fell, and Kitty hurried over. Colin seized his chance to run off, disappearing into the maze of alleys that made up that part of the town. "Matt, are you all right?" Kitty stooped to see Matt wincing and clutching his shoulder. "I had him, damn it! Oh, this wretched shoulder!" He managed to get to his feet. "Are you hurt?" Anxiety gripped her as Matt continued to clutch his arm, pain etched into his face. "I'll be okay. I've injured this arm before. Come on, let's get back to the hotel. I'll call the doctor and we can tell Inspector Greville that Colin has been sighted." Kitty bit her lip. Matt's face had paled and she could see he was struggling with every step. She was relieved when the half-timbered facade of the Dolphin finally hove into sight, and Matt was able to take a seat in the small office behind the front desk. Chapter 28. Kitty called the doctor and Inspector Greville. The inspector arrived first, the doctor being delayed at a house call to a woman having twins. Matt had recovered a little of his composure at least, with the aid of some brandy, when the inspector entered the office.
"I came as soon as I received your message. My men are out searching house to house in the town. Tell me what happened."
Matt gave the policeman an outline of the events leading up to Colin making his escape.
"I swear he was the man in the tunnel." "And now you are injured."
The inspector looked concerned at Matt's obvious discomfort as he tried to support his injured arm and shoulder.
"Just rotten bally luck. I took a bullet on this side in the war, and I think I hit the corner of the building right on the injured spot. My pride is smarting as much as anything else."
Matt attempted to play down his pain.
"You have to catch this man, Inspector," Kitty said. "He's obviously our murderer."
The inspector stroked his moustache.
"We are doing our best, Miss Underhay. I agree, he is clearly very dangerous."
There was a knock on the door to the office and Dr. Carter was shown into the small space.
"Sorry I was delayed. Two healthy baby boys safely delivered?"
He beamed at the group from under the brim of his hat. Kitty thought he looked like an innocent middle-aged baby cherub, with his smooth round face and bright blue eyes twinkling behind his little round spectacles.
"Now then, let the dog see the rabbit."
He placed his bag down on the table and peered at Matt's arm.
"I need to get back to the station. If there are any developments, I'll let you know."
The inspector addressed the last part of his remark to Matt, who was being assisted to remove his jacket, somewhat gingerly, by Dr. Carter. Kitty was about to make her excuses to slip out so the doctor could remove Matt's shirt to examine him privately, when Dr. Carter commandeered her into the role of nurse. She felt somewhat awkward standing by, handing the doctor rolls of bandage, tape and scissors as he cut off Matt's vest and began to strap his chest and shoulder. She took a sneak peek and saw the white raised ridges of scar tissue all around Matt's shoulder blade. He had clearly been much more badly wounded during the war than she had realized. Matt had his eyes closed tight while Dr. Carter did his work. A few times she heard his breath escape through his teeth in a hiss when the good doctor was a little firm with the strapping.
Eventually he was done, and the doctor assisted him with his shirt over his good arm before securing the heavily strapped injured arm in a sling.
Here.
Dr. Carter produced a small brown bottle containing a few pills from his bag.
Take a couple of these now and two more tonight, and rest that arm.
By tomorrow it should start to ease a little, but it will probably take a good week before you can remove the strapping.
Matt didn't look very happy with the doctor's prognosis as Kitty thanked him and showed him out of the office into the lobby.
You heard the doctor. You'd better go to your room and rest. Would you like me to have a tray sent up to you? Kitty bustled around collecting his things.
This is ridiculous. Oh, I can't believe Colin managed to get away.
Matt winced as he stood ready to leave. The cobbles were very slippery and he got you off balance, Kitty soothed as she helped him up the stairs. She escorted Matt to his room and insisted he rest. She organized a tray of tea and for the daily papers to be sent up so that he might amuse himself, listening to the radio and catching up with the news whilst he rested. She knew Matt wasn't happy at being out of action. In a way, it would make it easier for her to leave the hotel unseen later on that evening after work. She assuaged her feelings of guilt at not sharing her father's letter with Matt by justifying to herself that he needed to rest. Alone in her grandmother's suite, she secured the door and made her preparations. Taking the ruby from the secret safe in the window seat, she wrapped it well inside an old handkerchief. Deciding against a handbag, she picked out an old dark blue coat and made a small slit in the lining just large enough for the ruby to fit inside. It nestled between the rough woolen coat fabric and the satin lining in a small pocket. She would be able to retrieve it and hand it to her father, but if anyone were to hunt in her pockets, they would find nothing except a clean handkerchief and some small change. Kitty hunted through her shoes and found an older pair with a slightly lower heel in case she needed to make a quick getaway. She selected the hat she'd been wearing earlier and her sturdy umbrella as both protection from the rain and any possible assailant. Much as she hated the thought, one had to be practical. For her final precautions, she sat at her grandmother's bureau and wrote a couple of notes, sealing them into envelopes and writing times and names on the front. One was to Matt, and one was to Inspector Greville. When the time approached for her to meet her father, Kitty dressed carefully in her chosen outfit and went to the front desk to hand over her notes. Please ensure these notes are delivered at exactly the times written on the front of the envelopes. No earlier and no later. Her voice was stern as she instructed Alice, who was looking after the lobby.
Yes, Miss Underhay.
The young girl's eyes were round at the unexpected and unusual instruction. Kitty glanced quickly around the lobby to ensure both the night porter and Mickey, the maintenance man, were temporarily absent, and slipped out of the front door. She was glad of the protection of her umbrella as she made her way back through the town, past the boat float and to the foot of the small hill leading to St. Saviour's. The sound of the bells had been pealing all around her as she walked where the ringers were practicing their rounds. Now, though, the sound of the bells had ceased, and she waited in the shadows of the stone wall of the church as the ringers came out, calling goodnight to each other as they left. She expected the verger would be along to lock up soon, so she wouldn't have much time with her father. When she was satisfied that the last of the bell ringers had gone, Kitty hurried up the slope and into the entrance of the church. St. Saviour's was one of the oldest buildings in Dartmouth. It dated back to the early Middle Ages. The great oak-planked door was at least 700 years old. The ornate brass decorative work adorning it had been added a few centuries later, along with the carvings of animals. She had always thought it was beautiful, but now her emotions were too fraught to admire it as she usually did. The porch light was on, but inside, the church was dark, with only a few candles burning on a black wrought iron sconce at one side. The air inside the church was damp and cool, smelling of flowers and lavender and beeswax polish. The faint light from the candles cast shadows across the flagstone floor and the painted and carved wooden panels and pillars of the church. She held her breath when she noticed the figure of a man, his head bowed as if in prayer, sitting in the shadows at the far end of the back pew.
Father?
Even as a whisper, her voice seemed to magnify and echo around the empty space. The man raised his head, and Kitty strained to see his face in the shadow cast by the brim of his hat.
My darling girl, you came.
His voice was softer than she remembered from their last meeting. Her knees trembled as she slid onto the wooden pew next to him. She recognized him immediately as the man who had called himself Mr. Kelly when he'd met her in the town and at the launch of Miss Delaware's engagement at the Dolphin.
We don't have long, my dear. The verger will be by soon.
Her father took her hand in his.
My darling, I'm so sorry to have brought all this trouble upon you. I know that I owe you an explanation. I was shocked when you told me about your mother. I had no idea that something had happened.
He sighed.
When the war came, I had to decide whether to stay and fight or return to America. Your grandmother has no doubt told you her opinion of my choice, and I cannot defend it. I returned to America as I had prospects of money and business there, and no desire to risk my life on the front line. I fully intended to send for you and Eloed as soon as I had sorted out some problems and obtained a house for us. The war was supposed to be over by Christmas, but time went on and it wasn't possible for me to return. So what happened? There was nothing in my mother's things. No letters, no photographs, no trace of you. All I had was a copy of my mother's marriage certificate and my birth certificate.
Kitty's voice shook. The whole of her body trembled as she was finally able to ask the questions she'd always wanted to ask.
The war didn't end by Christmas. My business affairs became more complicated. In truth, Kitty, I was in a lot of trouble with some people who it wasn't wise to cross.
Was that when you took the ruby? She saw the corners of his mouth lift in a small, humorless twist.
No, your mother already had the ruby with her when she came back to London before I returned to America. I had been holding it as collateral for a gentleman, in settlement of gaming debts. He unfortunately met with an accident with several bullets, and I felt it prudent to lie low and keep you and your mother out of danger.
You didn't know where she had hidden it? Kitty asked.
He shook his head. She assured me it was safe. She wanted nothing to do with it, but was afraid for my safety and for you. We both thought it might give us some kind of financial security for the future. It was an uncertain time.
Kitty thought about his answers. Why didn't you write?
I wrote a few times. Then I didn't get any replies. I feared your mother had decided that being married to me was no longer what she wanted. I was moving around America and Canada. There was reports of bombings on London and other parts of England.
Vivian said you went to prison at one point, Kitty said.
He sighed once more. Yes, I did for a short time. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong company.
That must have been when your mother disappeared. I used to get some news from England from my sister, your aunt Hortense, but she and I are not on good terms. She disapproves of me.
I have an aunt.
This was news to Kitty. She had always thought her grandmother and her aunt Livy were her only family. Her mother and grandmother had never mentioned anyone else.
Yes, my dear. Your aunt is Lady Medford. She has a daughter, Lucy, a year or two younger than you. They have an estate near Exeter. My sister has, sad to say, virtually disowned me. Her husband, Lord Medford, threatened to set the hounds on me the last time I called. He gave a small chortle at her dumbfounded expression. It is a lot to take in, I know, my dear.
Do they know about me? Kitty asked.
They do now. I sent a telegram to my sister today. I knew she would probably burn a letter, but she would never ignore a telegram.
What do you plan to do now? Kitty asked, her mind still reeling with the news that she had an aunt and a cousin only a few miles away in the same county.
I have plans to leave the country for a time. I have some friends to assist me, and I shall return to America. I would like to stay in touch with you, if you would allow me, and I would very much like to try and find out what happened to Eloed. You are very like her, you know. He touched her cheek tenderly with a finger.
I would like that,
Kitty breathed, tears starting to well up in her eyes unbidden. Conscious that their time was almost up, they rose, ready to leave the church.
Father, before we say goodbye, I have something for your journey.
Kitty paused, ready to feel for the ruby hidden in the lining of her coat. The sound of footsteps on the floor of the porch sent them both darting into the shadows next to the ornately carved oak staircase that led up to the upper balcony and bell tower.
You may as well both come out. The game is up.
Walter Cribbs's reedy voice piped around the church as the outer door slammed shut and the electric lights came on overhead. Chapter 29. Kitty blinked in the sudden brightness of the electric light. Beside her, Edgar gave her hand a quick comforting squeeze.
Walter?
She could see Walter standing just inside the porch entrance with another figure just behind him. To her horror, on the floor, inside the locked wooden door of the church, lay the prone figure of the verger.
Walter, now am I, Kitty, my love?
He mocked her as he moved nearer. Kitty shrank back, closer to her father.
If I'd realized a little scare might enhance your affections, then I would have tried something earlier, rather than Colin's feeble attempt to scare you with a little traffic accident.
What do you want? Edgar asked.
Walter tutted.
Why, the ruby, of course. You don't think I've gone through all of this for nothing, do you?
Gone through all what? Kitty asked.
She dreaded the answer to her question, even as all the pieces of the puzzle began to tumble into place.
My dearest Kitty, didn't I tell you my prospects were on the up? Ever since Colin here told me about the ruby, I've been making plans.
As he spoke, Colin Wakes moved into the light. She felt her father stiffen.
You double-crossing blackguard!
What have you done to the verger?
Kitty hoped and prayed the man was merely unconscious and that nothing worse had befallen him. Colin stirred the man's body with his foot.
He's just having a little nap.
The verger emitted a low groan and Kitty's knees sagged a little with relief.
You know we don't have the ruby, don't you?
She turned her attention back to Walter. His eyes gleamed behind his glasses, and Kitty realized she was looking into the gaze of a madman.
I think you know where that stone is, my darling fiancé.
I am not your fiancé. I never will be. If you were the last man in Dartmouth, I would not marry you.
At her words, Walter lunged forward as if to grab her, but her father placed himself between Kitty and Walter.
Keep your hands away from my daughter.
Get him, Colin,
Walter ordered, and Kitty watched, horrified, as Colin darted forward and began to grapple with her father as Walter looked on. Colin, being younger and fitter than Edgar, despite his rough living over the last week, soon had the upper hand, and her father dropped to his knees. Incensed, Kitty grasped her umbrella firmly in her fist
and almost without thinking, brought it down hard on the back of Colin's head. There was a loud crack as the umbrella broke in two with the force of her blow. Colin paused mid-punch, and Kitty's heart leapt into her mouth when she thought she had not hit him hard enough to make him desist. He turned a surprised face towards her before crashing to the floor. She let out a little scream as he fell across her feet. Her father managed to stagger to his feet, a cut near his eye streaming blood as he went towards the door of the church, only to see that the large iron key was gone from the lock.
"Now that was very foolish," Walter tutted.
Kitty swung her attention back towards him, and with a cold wave of realization, saw that not only did Walter have the key in one hand, in his other he held a gun. He waved the key at them before dropping it back into his pocket.
"I hope you haven't hurt Colin too much. He has proved most useful so far."
He gave his unconscious colleague a kick.
"How useful? Did he murder his mother and kill Hubert Fargin and Mr. Blass?"
Kitty's voice wobbled. Walter waved the gun at her father, indicating he should rejoin Kitty.
"Cora knew too much. She wanted Colin to stop. She had to go once her usefulness at providing information and creating diversions was at an end. I cannot allow Colin the credit of killing her, however. He was foolishly attached to the old woman. It was far better that I dealt with the matter and convinced him that you, my dear Mr. Underhay, had done the deed. Mr. Blass was surplus to requirements."
Walter smirked as if pleased with himself, and bile rose in Kitty's throat.
"And Mrs. Craven? Who attacked her?"
Walter sighed.
"I had to search her house after Colin's mother informed us that there was a chance that the ruby might be there. I sent your dear grandmother notes urging her to hand over the stone. Her friend's injuries were her fault, really. She should have done as I asked. It would have been better if Mrs. Craven hadn't survived. Witnesses can be such a bore."
His eyes gleamed again, and Kitty suddenly realized that he was counting herself and her father as witnesses, and now that he was confessing, he had no intention of leaving them alive. Oh, she couldn't believe he'd been the hand behind the anonymous letters.
"And Hubert Fargin?"
Her father placed his arm around her waist, and she drew strength from his presence. The maniacal smile on Walter's face grew larger.
"Very satisfying. So much blood from such a small, withered-up old man. He had the temerity to blackmail me. Me! As if I would allow that to happen. He had seen me from his booth. I let him believe I was going to pay up and cut him in on a share of the money from the ruby. He was so unsuspecting when he opened his booth. It was so easy."
"Where do Vivian Delaware and Bobby fit into all this?" she asked.
She just had to keep him talking for long enough to find a way to get the gun, or for Matt and Inspector Greville to get the notes she had left for them. She felt almost clear-headed now that she had a purpose to concentrate on. A sneer twisted the corners of Walter's mouth.
"Bobby is an idiot. Mr. Blass gave us some very interesting information as we dispatched him. I really didn't want him encroaching on my territory, not when I had already hired Mr. DeVries for that job. He informed us that Bobby was on his way, a representative of some American crook he is in the pay of, the same gang that had hired Mr. Blass. It seems Vivian saw you, Edgar, at that nightclub in London where you met with Colin, and she and Bobby put two and two together. They are after the ruby too."
Kitty's father seemed to sag next to her.
"It's all my fault," he whispered.
But Kitty wouldn't allow herself to despair. She had to keep Walter talking.
"Why was Bobby giving you money, though? He was giving you money, wasn't he?"
She wondered what the time was. The note she'd left saying where she'd gone should be with Inspector Greville and Matt by now. The barrel of the gun gleamed as Walter waved it around,
Oh, yes, he proved a very satisfactory source of income. It's always dangerous when you work for the wrong people, especially if those people think you might be double-crossing them. He wouldn't want any whispers getting back to his taskmasters. I reminded him of that.
Walter giggled.
And he was double-crossing them?
She could see that Walter was reveling in what he saw as his cleverness and relishing the opportunity to boast about his crimes.
Of course. Bobby and Vivian wanted the ruby for themselves. They caught up with him, though, didn't they?
There is no honor amongst thieves, Edgar said sadly. The verger groaned and began to stir.
Walter stepped over a pace and aimed a kick at the man's head, the toe of his shoe making a sickening crunch as it met the verger's skull. Kitty winced, closed her eyes and huddled into her father's arms.
Now enough of this. Where, my darling Kitty, is the ruby?
Impelled into action as Walter turned his malicious attention to Kitty, Edgar moved forward slightly, partly shielding her with his body.
My daughter has told you she doesn't have it.
Stay where you are,
Walter ordered and waved the gun once more.
You must know then. Where is it, old man?
Edgar sighed. My wife had the ruby in her possession for safekeeping when she came back to Dartmouth. I never knew where she'd hidden it. That's the truth.
Walter's eyes glittered.
I don't believe you. You came back to retrieve that stone, so you must have had an idea of where it was.
Did my mother's disappearance have anything to do with the ruby?
Kitty asked. Walter would have been a child at the time, of course, but she had clearly underestimated his skills for uncovering secrets. Her question appeared to take Walter by surprise.
How would I know anything about your mother vanishing when she did?
You work for the Herald. You must have looked back in the newspaper files for some clue,
Kitty persisted. She thought she had heard the faint sound of footsteps on the gravel outside the front door of the church. The expression on his face altered, and she could see he had been searching the records.
Obviously, I looked for clues. After all, the woman could have taken the ruby with her, sold it, and made a new life for herself somewhere.
And?
She coughed as loudly as she dared, hoping that if someone was outside, they would stop and listen and not try the door to the church.
Nothing. Nothing to indicate why she might have run off, and nothing about the stone.
He waved the gun once more at Edgar.
Now, where is that ruby?
Kitty swallowed. She was hoping against hope that there was someone outside the church, and they could hear something of what was happening.
I don't have it. Eloed vanished before she could tell me where it was. My letters went unanswered, and until I came back here, I didn't know what had happened to her. Your henchman there, he nodded towards Colin, had kept that news from me. He led me to believe she was alive, well, and still here at the Dolphin with Kitty and her grandmother. It wasn't until I arrived in Dartmouth that I realized I had been deceived.
A smirk crept over Walter's face.
Yes, Colin did his job well. How fortunate that you happened to run into him when you did and decided he would be useful to you.
Kitty was certain now that she'd heard a small sound from within the church itself, and her spirits lifted a little. She had to keep Walter engaged and feeling pleased with himself for just a little longer.
You planned it all, didn't you? My father didn't meet Colin by accident. You had him meet him, prepared with some story to get him to tell you where the ruby was. But how did you know my father was in England and make all the connections?
Ah, my dear sweet Kitty. You see now what a brain I have? And the great honour I did you by asking you to be my wife? Though truth to tell, that was luck as well as genius.
Walter cackled.
I have many connections through my job as a reporter. I was asked to look at the passenger lists of a certain liner, as a very famous film star was supposed to be aboard and coming unheralded into the country. A nice little scandal involving a secret baby and a married member of Parliament. Well, I found my lady, and I also found your father. Your surname is not that common, and a few checks soon helped me put the pieces together and helped me to plan.
And how did you know about the ruby?
She had definitely heard a tiny sound, closer this time. I have sources in America, and the obliging Colin, of course.
Walter stopped talking and peered into the dark body of the church behind Kitty and her father.
Who's there?
No response came back. He moved to press the switch which would illuminate the main part of the church. Before he could flick the switch, her father had moved also, making a dive for Walter's arm. As they grappled together, the gun went off with a deafening roar, and the light bulb above their heads shattered, sending shards of glass raining down on them as they were plunged into blackness.
Chapter 30. Kitty froze, trying to work out their positions in the darkness. The only light showing now was the faint gleam of candles just inside the secondary door to the church, near the pew where she had sat earlier with her father.
Papa! She cried out.
The two men were still scuffling, and in the gloom she couldn't see who was who. She tried to edge around the protagonists, but stumbled against what she realized must be Colin's prone body.
Kitty! The door!
Her father called, and she heard something metallic hit the floor. Acting swiftly, she dropped to her knees and groped around for what she hoped was the key. If she could just find it and get the door open, hopefully Greville's men would be outside. As her fingers closed over the large metal key, a heavy foot crunched down on her hand, and the electric light in the main body of the church came on. She looked up, wincing from the pain in her fingers, to see Walter leering down at her.
I don't think so, do you?
He waved the gun at her.
Get up.
He released her hand and she scrambled to her feet. Her father was slumped against the stairwell to the upper level, the wound to his face pouring more blood, red and sticky, down the side of his face.
Papa!
Where was the person they'd heard in the church? There had been someone in there with them. Or had she imagined it?
What have you done to him?
She went to go to her father.
Stay where you are. He's all right, Walter commanded.
She'd derived a degree of satisfaction from noticing that Walter himself had not escaped unscathed from the fight. There was a streak of blood below his nose, and one eye had started to swell. Her father groaned and moved. Relief raced through her. Walter jabbed Edgar hard in his ribs with the barrel of the revolver.
Time to move.
He turned to Kitty.
You too.
She picked her way past Colin and went to her father's side so he could lean on her for support. Her fingers hurt where Walter had stamped on her hand, and she wondered if her little finger was broken.
Move!
He waved the gun at them once more and forced them to walk in front of him towards a small side door. Kitty had the bulk of her father's weight against her as they walked, and his breath sounded raspy in the cool air.
Walter, this is madness. What do you plan to do?
She received a hard poke in her back from the nose of the gun for her question.
My plans do not concern you anymore, my dear Kitty. You refused my offer of marriage, remember? Now you must live with the consequences. Or rather, not.
He giggled as if he'd said something amusing.
Open the door.
That awful giggle, high and girlish, must have been what Mrs. Craven had heard. Reluctantly, she stretched out her hand to unlatch the door in front of her, trying to delay the moment for as long as she dared. She knew that once they were inside, whatever room or cupboard lay behind the door, their fates would probably be sealed. Just then, she heard a great hammering and rattling at the door of the church behind them.
Police! Open up!
Walter scowled.
Open the door, hurry,
he barked. The thuds at the medieval door grew louder,
Her hand fumbled the key below the latch, and it dropped to the floor with a metallic ping.
Walter's attention was distracted between the noise at the front door and trying to hurry Kitty along. Her father appeared barely conscious.
"Pick that up," Walter snarled.
She awkwardly leaned her father against the wall and bent to do Walter's bidding. As she did so, she saw movement behind Walter in the shadows. Whoever had entered the church earlier had worked their way around to get closer to them. It had to be Matt. She scrabbled for the key, deliberately making her actions clumsy.
"Get a move on, or your old man gets a bullet now,"
Walter pointed the gun at her father.
"My fingers hurt from where you stamped on them," Kitty said.
At that, a figure burst from the shadows and slammed into Walter, knocking him to the floor and sending the gun out of his hand and skidding towards the foot of the stairs.
"Kitty, the gun,"
Matt commanded. She ran forward, leaping over Colin, and grabbed the revolver.
"Stop!"
She pointed the barrel at Walter and tried to keep her hands steady. Walter froze in the face of the merciless weapon, allowing Matt to kneel on top of him, pinning him to the floor.
"Good work, Kitty."
Matt grimaced and she could see the pain he was in from his injured shoulder. She kept the gun trained on Walter, who wriggled futilely under Matt's weight as she collected the key to the main door from the floor. In a few seconds, the door was open and Inspector Greville's men piled in from the porch. As soon as Walter was in handcuffs and Kitty was relieved of the gun, she hurried to her father's side.
"Papa."
She assisted him to a pew as Matt limped across to join them. Walter was half led, half dragged between two burly constables to the waiting police car, swearing and screaming. "Dr. Carter is on his way. I sent a message to him as soon as I received your note." Matt closed his eyes and drew in a breath through his teeth.
"Thank God I found an open window. What the hell did you think you were doing?"
"Catching a murderer."
She watched as the police directed the ambulance men to move the verger, who had now come around, out to the waiting vehicle. Then they returned with a stretcher for Colin.
"I didn't kill him, did I?"
she asked.
"Unfortunately, no.
Though no doubt he'll face the hangman along with Walter Cribbs for all his crimes." Inspector Greville stood looking at the three of them.
"I'll need statements from all of you when the doctor has attended you."
He moved away to supervise his men. Dr. Carter entered the church clutching his dark brown leather medical bag. The vicar accompanied him, wringing his hands as he inspected the doors and the church for any damage. Dr. Carter's round, cherubic face was flushed pink with excitement.
"What on earth has been happening?"
he asked as he placed his bag down carefully on the pew next to Edgar.
"It's a long story, Doc."
Matt winced as he spoke. The doctor pursed his lips, a frown creasing his forehead.
"I see you didn't follow my instructions."
He popped open his bag and began to attend Edgar first, cleaning the wound on his face and checking his reflexes.
"No lasting damage, and you have escaped sutures."
He applied a dressing to his head and secured it with a bandage.
"I have quite a headache,"
Edgar complained meekly.
"Compared to what it could have been, a headache is nothing."
Kitty felt sick when she thought of what could have happened.
"I suspect Colin's head will feel far worse when he comes around. You broke your umbrella, my dear,"
her father observed wryly.
"So it was you who bashed Colin over the head? I might have guessed."
Matt winced as the doctor looked at the strapping he'd applied earlier to Matt's chest and shoulder. He grunted as Dr. Carter tutted and clucked while adding more strapping to his torso.
"Now, Miss Underhay, your injuries, if you please."
The doctor tied the knot firmly on a fresh sling around Matt's neck and turned to Kitty.
"My hand. Walter stamped on my fingers. I can't move my little finger very well."
The doctor gently eased her fingers straight so he could examine them.
"I think they are just badly bruised.
Pop along to the hospital tomorrow and we can take a look in case it needs splinting,"
I'll strap it for now, and I suggest some cold compresses to keep the swelling down.
Inspector Greville returned.
It's very late. I suggest you return to the Dolphin to get some sleep, and I'll be there at 10 tomorrow to take your statements.
Kitty glanced at her watch and was surprised to see it was almost 1 in the morning.
Allow me to give you a lift back to the hotel. My motor car is in the street.
Dr. Carter fastened his bag and beamed at them as if it were they who were favouring him rather than it being the other way about. The doctor assisted Matt to the front passenger seat while Kitty aided her father to the back seat.
Off we go then.
Dr. Carter started the engine and they hurtled through the deserted streets the short distance back to the hotel.
Thanks, Doc,
Matt said as he carefully negotiated his exit from the car. Kitty was thankful the journey had been so short. Dr. Carter appeared to have two speeds, fast or at a standstill. She suspected longer journeys might be quite terrifying. The night porter admitted them to the lobby. His shocked expression at their bloodied and battered state almost made her smile. Father, you had better take my room on the floor next to Matt, and I'll sleep in Grams's suite again tonight. She led the way to the elevator. The night porter came to assist with the metal cage to permit them entry. She accompanied them to the top floor and said goodnight to Matt before taking her father to her room. There was a strange emotion in Matt's eyes as he bade them goodnight, but she didn't have the energy to consider it just now. She had used up her stocks of bravery for the night.
Thank you, Kitty. Her father took her hands in his. You were very brave this evening. I'm so glad you came to no harm.
She stood on tiptoe and kissed his cheek.
Me too.
She freed her hand from his and felt inside her coat.
By the way, I have something for you.
She reached inside the secret pouch she had fashioned in the lining and took out the handkerchief containing the ruby. She pressed the bundle into his palm.
Take it. Do what you will with it, so long as it is gone where it can cause no more trouble.
His eyes, damp with emotion, met her gaze.
I promise it will cause you no more grief, child. You look so much like your mother, and you have her courage and spirit.
To her surprise, she saw tears cloud his vision.
My darling girl.
He stooped and kissed her forehead.
Good night.
She left him in her room, promising to send a maid with a tray of tea and toast in the morning before the inspector came to take their statements. She made her way to her grandmother's suite in a state of exhaustion. Her fingers hurt and her body ached. At least now that Walter was in custody, the danger was over. Soon her grandmother would be back with her Aunt Livy, and she might be able to persuade her father to stay a little longer, now he was no longer under the threat of arrest. Chapter 31. Kitty woke the next morning to the rattle of the door of the suite opening, followed by a soft knock at her bedroom door.
Good morning, Miss Underhay. Tea and toast.
Alice, the little red-haired maid, set the tray down on top of the bedside cabinet.
Shall I open the curtains and let the day in, miss?
Please.
What time is it?
She tried to peer blearily at her wristwatch, which she'd removed and placed next to her bed.
8:30, miss. Can I do anything else for you?
The girl turned back from opening the curtains and smiled cheerfully at Kitty.
No, thank you.
She pulled up her pillows, wincing when she forgot the strapping Dr. Carter had applied to her fingers, then helped herself to tea and toast. An hour later, bathed and breakfasted, she hummed to herself as she hurried upstairs to tap at her father's door. Receiving no answer, she tried the handle and discovered the door unlocked.
Papa?
She walked in to see the bed neatly made and everything in perfect order. Two envelopes were on her dresser, one addressed to her and the other to Inspector Greville. There was a tap at the door, and she turned her head to see Matt's tall frame.
"He's gone, hasn't he?" she asked.
"You sound like you expected it." She nodded.
"I hoped he might stick around for a little while."
She touched the corner of the envelope he'd left for her with the edge of her bandaged hand. Her father's departure was disappointing, but not unexpected. She had a feeling that he was a man who never lingered anywhere for very long.
"Has he taken the ruby?"
Matt asked as he edged into the room and sat down carefully on a chair, nursing his injured arm.
"I hope so,"
he smiled.
"I'm sure life will be simpler with it gone."
Kitty sank down on the edge of her bed.
"He left letters, one for me and one for Inspector Greville."
"Inspector Greville will be here soon."
Matt stood and groaned.
"I'm starting to think jumping on top of Walter Cribbs probably wasn't my most sensible move last night."
Kitty collected the letters to take down to her grandmother's suite.
"I'm very grateful that you did."
They made their way together slowly down the stairs.
"Last night was so surreal."
Kitty paused outside the door of the suite.
"This strapping is annoying."
She fumbled with the key to unlock the door.
"Don't talk to me about strapping. I'm hoping no one looks too closely at my shave this morning."
Matt followed her inside the room. She placed the letter for Inspector Greville on the bureau and used the paper knife to open the letter with her name on it.
"I've ripped it."
She tugged the note free of the envelope.
"My dearest Kitty, I'm sure you'll understand that I can't stay. Your grandmother and aunt will be home soon, and I suspect that I'm not the house guest your grandmother would wish to receive. I promise you that I will write with my address once I am back in America. I hope that you will hear from your aunt Hortense and cousin Lucy. I think you will like Lucy. She is a very modern young woman, I believe. I expect that my leaving in this fashion will cause your grandmother to say that a leopard does not change its spots. Perhaps she is correct. But always remember, my darling girl, that this old leopard loves you dearly. Till next we meet, take care. All my love, your affectionate papa."
Kitty blinked and fumbled for a handkerchief.
"I know he's a disreputable old rogue, but there's something about him."
"Who are Aunt Hortense and Cousin Lucy?" Matt asked.
"Lady Medford is my father's sister. Rather unsurprisingly, they are estranged, and he has only just told them about me and me about them. They have an estate near Exeter."
Matt pursed his lips and let out a low whistle. Kitty laughed.
"I know."
There was a knock at the door, and Inspector Greville was shown in by one of the portering staff. He raised his hat politely to Kitty and, at her invitation, removed it and took a seat.
"Will Mr. Underhay be joining us?"
he asked as the maid returned with a tea tray and biscuits.
"My father left this for you."
Kitty handed him the note addressed to him. The inspector opened the envelope and removed several sheets of paper. He read them in silence, only the occasional raising of his eyebrows indicating his thoughts on the contents. When he'd finished reading, he refolded the note, returned it to the envelope, and tucked it in the back of his notebook.
"Your father appears to have left a complete and detailed statement of events, Miss Underhay. Naturally, I shall need to take a statement from you and Captain Bryant about the events of yesterday evening."
He looked at Kitty as she proffered him the plate of biscuits.
"Of course."
She took a biscuit herself and nibbled at the corner.
"Mr. Cribbs is in police custody, although he has been seen by a psychiatrist, and there is a feeling that he may be sent to an asylum.
The events of last night appear to have sent him completely over the edge.
The inspector brushed crumbs from his tie and looked hopefully towards the biscuit plate. Kitty took the cue and offered him more biscuits.
Colin Wakes is under police guard at the hospital. He has now regained consciousness and is happily singing like a canary about Walter Cribbs.
The inspector bit down on his biscuit with a contented sigh.
I'm glad Kitty is safe now and Mr. Cribbs is locked up.
Matt set his cup back on its saucer.
Will you be remaining at the Dolphin, Captain?
The inspector asked. Matt exchanged glances with Kitty. She hadn't given much thought to what would happen now it was over and the mystery was solved.
Mrs. Treadwell and her sister arrived today, so I will need to discuss things with her now that the immediate terms of my employment have been fulfilled.
Kitty's spirits fell unaccountably at the thought of Matt leaving. It may have been dangerous and scary over the last couple of weeks, but she had felt more alive than she had for a long time. She also enjoyed Matt's company, even if he could sometimes prove annoyingly protective.
Will you remain in the area?
The inspector looked somewhat mournfully at the empty biscuit plate. Perhaps he had skipped his breakfast.
I have some plans, Matt said,
surprising Kitty.
Good, good. Well, shall we set to business then?
The inspector put down his tea and began the lengthy process of taking their statements. It took until lunchtime to complete the details. The inspector left and asked them to call at the police station in the next few days to check and sign the statements once typed. Kitty promised to let the inspector know if her father made contact so his statement too could be verified. Once the inspector had left, they made their way to the dining room for lunch.
You must go and rest after we've eaten.
Kitty was concerned that Matt had begun to look pale once more.
For once, I shan't argue with that.
Vivian and Bobby were at their usual table, and Kitty noted that Vivian was dressed in her travelling costume. Bobby's face was a mass of purple and blue bruising that made Kitty wince. They were finishing their meal as Matt and Kitty were seated. The waiter took their order and left. Bobby and Vivian came over to their table. Matt immediately rose and asked Vivian to take a seat.
No, thank you, honey. Our car will be here soon, and I must supervise them loading the trunks.
We heard that they caught the murderers last night.
She looked at Kitty's strapped-up fingers and Matt's sling.
Yes, Walter Cribbs and Colin Wakes are behind bars, Kitty said. My maid told me that Edgar had been here too last night.
Vivian looked tired, Kitty realized. There were fine lines at the corners of her eyes.
Yes, he was, but he had to leave early this morning.
Vivian looked at Bobby.
Bobby felt I should come and apologize to you, Kitty. Our stay here wasn't entirely on the level, and some things happened.
She paused and looked at her husband again.
Well, let's just say I may have done things that I bitterly regret.
Kitty realized that this was a big admission coming from Vivian.
I understand.
Now that the ruby was gone and her father safe, she could even forgive Vivian for damaging her beloved clock. Bobby gave a small cough.
If you'll excuse me, I think the car may be here.
Vivian watched him leave the dining room.
Have you ever been in love, Miss Underhay?
Kitty shook her head, color stealing into her cheeks.
Lots of folk don't get it, but I love Bobby. He rescued me at a time when I really thought I was gonna die. The Depression hit hard in America, especially amongst those of us who had little or nothing to begin with. Bobby saved me. Finding that ruby would have meant we would have been free. Free to stay in Europe, Paris maybe, where we're more accepted. We would have been safe. Oh, desperation makes folks do desperate things.
Love makes you do desperate things.
Kitty caught Vivian's hand in her undamaged one.
I'm sorry. I do understand. Will you be all right?
Vivian gave a small smile.
I hope so.
I wanted to explain before we left. I'm glad you met Eddie.
He's not a bad man. He just wanted a better life, I guess.
Kitty released Vivian.
I know. I hope you and Bobby have a safe journey and that things work out for you both.
Vivian shook hands with Matt and stalked away, her head held high, to accept her furs from the staff as she left to supervise her luggage.
I never asked you about your plans now this is over. Are you going to be staying in Devon?
Kitty asked, once their meal was before them.
Actually, I've seen a house in Glampton on the other side of the river. Churston, not far from the golf course. I've been at a bit of a loose end since I left the army. And since, well, since I left London. My parents would like to see me settled, and I have no desire to return to the capital.
His expression was bleak, and Kitty knew he was thinking about the past.
Because of Edith?
She thought of what Vivian had just said about love.
Yes.
What will you do?
She chased a piece of potato with her fork. It was proving difficult to eat with only one good hand. It made her unconscionably happy to know that he planned to stay in the area.
I rather thought I might stay in the security and investigation business.
A hotelier in Torquay I got talking to during the masked ball has already approached me to investigate a problem of some thefts from guests.
Sometimes these things are too delicate a matter for the police. Kitty smiled.
That sounds interesting. Of course, if you wanted any assistance any time, where a woman's touch might be useful.
She arched an eyebrow at him, her pulse speeding a little.
Then I can call upon you?
He smiled at her.
Absolutely.
She beamed back at him.
I am terribly handy with an umbrella.
By the by.
He paused and wiped his mouth with his napkin and signalled to one of the waiting staff.
I have a little something for you.
For me?
Kitty was puzzled. The waiter returned, carrying a large cardboard box. She pushed her plate aside and the waiter set the box down in front of her.
What is this?
Open it, Matt said. Curious, she carefully undid the flaps on the top of the box and parted the tissue paper.
Oh, Matt! It's my mother's cuckoo clock! How on earth? And it's been repaired! Oh, thank you.
She swallowed back the tears of joy that threatened to overwhelm her. The broken fretwork had been replaced and it looked as good as new.
I knew how special it was to you. There's no secret jewel hidden in it this time, though. The weights are both lead and the timekeeping should be improved.
Thank you.
She stared at the clock.
Do you think I'll ever find out what happened to her, Matt?
She couldn't begin to express how happy she felt having one of the last links to her mother returned to her.
I'll keep it as an open case, he promised.
The waiter returned, bearing an envelope.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Miss Underhay, but this just came.
He handed her a telegram.
Panic swept through her. Oh, I hope everything is all right with Grams and Aunt Livy.
She tore it open with shaking fingers.
Surely nothing had happened to her father. Invitation to stay follows. Can't wait to meet you, Cousin Lucy.
She read it out loud to Matt before turning to the waiter. Relief rushed through her.
No reply, thank you.
Very good, Miss Kitty.
The waiter left. She wondered what her grandmother would make of the news that she now had other relations not too far away from her. It was strange that only a few weeks ago she had been wishing for more excitement and an escape from the hotel. it went to show that one should be careful what one wished for. On the positive side, now she had new relations to meet, and the possibility of assisting with Matt's proposed new venture. Matt raised his glass, a twinkle in his dark blue eyes. "Here's to new beginnings." Kitty smiled back. New beginnings.
If you loved Murder at the Dolphin Hotel and would like to know when the next book in the Miss Underhay Mysteries series is out, then sign up to Helena Dixon's mailing list at www.bookature.com/Helena-Dixon.
This has been Murder at the Dolphin Hotel, written by Helena Dixon. Copyright 2019 by Helena Dixon. Production copyright 2019 by Bookature.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.